There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. And a couple things to just talk about quickly. By the way, too, I was busy and was distracted during the break because the Fed cut came out, right? The Fed rate cut. First time this year, you've got a Fed interest rate cut. And then, of course, I had to go directly to the stocks and start looking. And Bitcoin down a little bit today. Dogecoin's up. Wow. We'll be able to retire one day. Tesla was up. Cracker Barrel's down. I don't know. I just saw, you know, when Charles Payne pops up on Fox Business with whatever cool suit he's wearing, you pay attention. But, yeah, we can get to that story in a little bit on the show. Also, just want to give you a heads up. Friday, Midday Mobile will be live at the grounds for the G&D Outdoor Expo. So this is year two of that. So we'll see you out there Friday from noon to 2, and then I'll be back. Mike Ward and I will be there from 11 to noon on Saturday with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors on location at the grounds at the Outdoor Expo with G&D Farms. It's going to be a lot of fun, so hopefully you get out there and take part in it. And before I get our next guest on, I just want to read a couple of quick texts here. Let's see. If I missed them here, somebody said this, it was Mike. I mentioned the concert because I think his Fire Dog said he went to the show, for Judas Priest and Alice Cooper. And then I said, Leanna went to the same show and it started early. And, Mike says, I agree with the early concert time, as long as it doesn't interfere with senior early dinner specials. I think you're onto something. They should plan when you get the discount, you know, with your AARP card, you get the discounted meal, and then have the show start, because we drive slowly, right? Because we're older, 15 to 20 minutes after that. So you can go have a meal and then go to the rock and roll show. That if they would start at 8 o'clock, I'm all in. Actually, let me ask this man about it. It's, I think I had him, and then I lost him. Let's see if he gets back on with us. Okay, well, tell you what, Leanna, if you'll watch, if John gets back on, we can get him through here, because I want to, he is a rock and roll fan, and he's younger than me, but he may appreciate the earlier start. Let's see the B-Dark. Let me get some B-Dark text here. Let's see. Said, if you can't train your own dog, you don't need the dog. No freedom of speech today. And then showing off that, yes, you've shown this to me before, B-Dark, and I am jealous. Some tickets and a backstage pass for Kiss. I like the fact that B-Dark is a Kiss fan. I think that's pretty cool. So those are awesome. One day I'll take pictures, B-Dark, if I can send them back through the text line. I think I can. I'll take some backstage passes that I still have in a box somewhere at my house from a couple decades in rock and roll radio. Let's see. Travis says, it's truly sad. I had to unfriend four people on Facebook over the Charlie Kirk stuff. One clergy, one extended family member, one deacon, and one musician friend. All right, I'll tell you what, we'll get back to these in just a second. Without further delay, which there's been some delay. It's my fault. It's my buddy John Sharp with AL.com. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
Doing good. Here's what I want your reaction to. So it came up, one of our listeners, Fire Dog, talked about going to the Judas Priest, Alice Cooper show. And the last night in Biloxi, and Leanna went to the same show. They got started rocking by 8 o'clock at night. I think if more shows would do this, you're a metal fan, right? If they would start these shows realizing their audience is aging, if we could have, I'd take a 6:30 start for a rock show because I want to go to these shows. I just can't go to some show that starts at 1 in the morning.
Yeah, I can see two sides of the coin there. Yeah, I mean, you know, you also have to get off work. You have to get
okay. So 8 o'clock, 7, 8 o'clock. I mean, versus 11 o'clock at night.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you there. You don't want to be coming home at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's dangerous. but yeah, no, you make a good point. Yeah, most typical concerts start around 8 o'clock, 8:30. I know Alice Cooper played in Mobile not too long ago, so I don't know. I haven't been to a concert in Biloxi in ages, so I really don't know what the.
But even downtown Mobile, I was pushing this back when I was in music radio. The concert people's like, well, not a lot of people showed up at this show. I said, listen, if y'all had done that show at 8 versus 11, we come. I want to hear the band. I just have to go to work the next day.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, just going to concerts over the years, I mean, you know, sometimes depending how far you got to drive to get home and that, I mean, it's. An event that goes on till about midnight. I mean, you got to be rested and ready to go. It's things you got to think about nowadays. When we get to a certain age, then we didn't have to worry about years ago.
But, that's right.
Go ahead.
No, I just said that's our push. I need some solidarity with you. We're all going to push to say have rock and roll shows or even country shows just start a little bit earlier for the older fans, we'll put it that way.
Or hockey games, dropping the puck at 7 o'clock. There's a segue there to some news that was just announced today.
Yeah, so I heard, breaking this morning, so you were there, we're going to get a hockey team, a professional hockey team, that's what we know, or do we know any more details on that?
Well, yeah, they're going to be in the Southern Professional Hockey League, which I think is kind of cool, because that's the same league that the Pensacola Ice Flyers are in. And
good.
That... you know, puts a little bit of hey, we know who our opponents are. This is a hockey league that's been around for a while, since 2004. They got some real mainstays in the league that have been there for a long time. And their Midwestern franchises have been around for a long time. I know this personally because I used to write about them when I was up in the Midwest. They just been, you know, in Peoria and the Quad Cities. But the teams down here in the southern part of that are in the Southern Professional Hockey League are also in Birmingham and Huntsville. So we have some little bit of bragging rights here. We got Pensacola, we got a team in Pensacola, we got a team in Huntsville, and there's a team in Birmingham in the same league. So you know, that'll add a little bit of intrigue to it. But I, you know, with anything with minor league sports, it all boils down to the experience that you have at the games. The family fun atmosphere, what's going to bring fans back to experience this game, not necessarily the wins and the losses, although you want to see a team that's competitive and that's fun to watch. You don't want to go there and see a loser.
Losers.
Night in and night out, yeah. But I go to Pensacola. Games are a lot of fun. There's something for fans and children, families to do constantly. I mean, they're throwing foam pucks on the ice and they're bringing different scout groups out on the ice to unfurl the flag for the national anthem. I mean, it seems like it would be a true community event. And I think that's something that the new owners of this Mobile team, and they're based out of Jacksonville, Florida. I think that's what they're planning to do when the team begins its inaugural season, which will be in 2027, 2028. And usually a hockey season starts in the fall around October. So that'll be sometime after the Civic Center Arena officially opens, which we believe that's going to be in January of 2027.
Yeah, knock on wood. You know, John, one of the things about hockey and watching the Mystics when they were here, and I've said this before, it's almost kind of similar to the train that we'll talk about in a second, is I see myself as being somebody who I'll come out to a game or two, but like, will I be there for every game? I don't know. Just like the train, will I, you know, ride it for the novelty? Yes, but not all the time. But how do we get more people involved in the hockey world? And I had Councilman Ben Reynolds on a month or two ago. We were talking about this, maybe maybe a little further back, maybe I'd say 2 months ago. And he said they are going to build this ice rink. And I think that was going to be financed by OVG to some degree, to where we could have, if the kids start playing and they get into hockey and I can go, you know, with the kids to watch their hockey practice, then maybe I'm more into hockey. Maybe I come to the big kids game. I mean, to kind of build a hockey culture, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Exactly. You make a good point. And that's going to be a thing going forward to see what kind of, we really don't have that in Mobile. But, you know, does that necessarily translate into success of a minor league franchise? Well, the argument can be made with a lot of folks that play baseball around this area. There's a lot of there's been some discussions. Even Spiro Chiriogatis mentioned in the debate we held yesterday that or perhaps it was the Fox 10 debate, but he mentioned that you know, he'd be interested in seeing a more of a baseball complex someday. So baseball and softball is a big deal in this area. However, that hasn't translated into success of a minor league baseball team. So, you know, there's more elements at play there, but certainly that does help to have, you know, junior plays on the on the junior Mystics team. So let's take him to, you know, and we get tickets and at a discount and you know, my friends are also hockey dads and that sort of thing. Yeah, that's certainly, there's certainly something to be said about that to help sustain that going forward. I know Pensacola has some hockey infrastructure over there, and that's helped, you know, their franchise has been around for a while now as well. So, you know, Mobile had a franchise from 95 to 2002. I think the viewpoint was that, you know, they had a really catchy name in Mystics. And I know there's going to be a naming competition.
I don't know.
They got a website open now.
Well, yeah, where is that? I was wondering that because, I mean, like any announcement like this, it would be something about naming to get the people involved.
Well, it just was announced, you know, today, but there is a website where people can log on to. And I'll be up shortly when my story goes up online here. But it's mobileprohockey.com, and there's a link there. And I haven't really dived into what's on that link yet, but apparently there's a name the team contest that's live on there, and that'll help folks that are participating that help choose the team's identity. So,
guys, I think Mystics. I mean, I may hear something better, but right now, I mean, Mystics is pretty good.
I kind of agree. It's hard to top that one. I don't know what the what the legal rights are there to dust off the old brand and put it back. You still see Mystics jerseys being sold around town. So, I mean, you know, it's still a thing, and it's kind of like, how do you name a train between Mobile and New Orleans anything but the Mardi Gras service? So it's kind of, I'm with you, Sean. I hear you on that one. It's hard to, you know, whether the team's named the Mobile Bears or something, and be like,
Mystics is too good.
Right.
And also, I will pull back the curtain, although I think you put some stuff up on Twitter about it. So conversation John and I were having about the Amtrak service, the Mardi Gras service, is that there was a, I guess, press release, was it last week or whatever, is, hey, they're adding extra car for Saints games. And you were looking at it going, this doesn't exactly line up. We were talking like just, you know, personally about it doesn't line up with the times for the games or all that stuff. Where does that sit? Like, when do the Saints both? I don't watch a lot of pro ball, but I mean, what's the early game? What's the late game? What time do they kick off? And what time's the train get you there and get you home?
Yeah, all that's a big question mark. And this was raised in a story written by an industry insider who I met, actually, a really nice guy. He took the inaugural trip as well. This guy's a guru on this kind of stuff. And he kind of did an analysis on you know, the train success so far, and it has been. It's seen this bump initially. It's the Southern Rail Commission is certainly pleased by the inaugural rollout of the Mardi Gras service. But going forward, I mean, I think that's the challenge. You know, can we sustain this momentum? Well, one of the things that they're going to do, they're looking at, is because the weekends that the Saints are playing, they're getting a lot of folks jumping on the three cars that are offered right now. And it's, you know, they're sellouts. So Amtrak, you know, they're responding to the market. They're going to add an extra car. Apparently it's not easy to get a car down, you know, just position it down into the Gulf Coast. So this is a little bit of a challenge, but they're going to get a car here. They're going to add it for the Saints games. But the challenge then also is, well, wait a minute here. You know, the Saints games that are noon kickoffs are perfect when I leave Mobile for the 6:30 train, heading to New Orleans. You get downtown New Orleans by, you know, whatever time that is, I'm not sure, but it's before 10 o'clock in the morning. You can tailgate, have a good time, then you go to the noon game. The noon game is over with around, what, 3 o'clock or so, 3:30, and the train departs, you know, the second train out of New Orleans departs around 5:30 or so. It's a little bit more of a challenge when it's a 3:30 kickoff, and there's a few of those coming up, so You know, the question is, will Amtrak be willing to adjust its schedule in order to accommodate that? I've not heard, and I've not seen any indication that's going to be the case. And also, the Saints have played two home games. There's only, five more left? And so you have a couple others that are 3:30 kickoffs. So, you know, how are they going to adjust that scheduling going forward? I don't know. I mean, you know, that's a good question. It was raised by one of the industry insiders, is just like, you know, hey, you know, this is to see the success of this additional car, you know, but there are other elements here at play. And of course, I don't think the Saints are going to be playing a Monday Night Football, but you never know. And so then you also have another curveball. When, you know, in an NFL season, you have, what, 7 or 8 home games. That's it. So, you know, there's minimal opportunities here with that extra car. But be that as it may, that announcement suggests that at least during these home football games, there's a lot of interest of folks leaving out of either Mobile or in coastal Mississippi stops to get to the Saints games via the train. And it really does line up for a noon game, especially. It lines up perfectly. You get to Union Terminal Station, which is within walking distance of the Superdome and walking distance of all the bars and the restaurants that partake in the pregame activities before the Saints game. So it's really a neat atmosphere. It's a neat addition. I think it works, especially for those noon games, but anything later in the day becomes more, and unless you spend the night in New Orleans and get up the next morning and take the early train out of New Orleans. But then again, you'd have to take Monday off in order to get back Mobile in time. So.
Yeah, you got to compare the schedule. I tell you, just anecdotally, I've been looking. I was going to take my son. Like I said, I was going to do a ride just to do the train thing, not because it's efficient, just because it's fun. It's been pretty booked. When I've gone for the dates, I've been looking like, hey, can I book us 2 seats on that? It's been pretty full.
Well, I think the secret sauce in all this, was really not talked about much. I think it's hard to describe it verbally or even in the written word, is that once you get on the train, it's a very scenic route. I mean, most train rides that I've taken in the past, whether it's in the Midwest or even up on the Northeast, have been, you look out the window, there isn't much to see. Well, between Mobile and New Orleans, there's a lot to see, and it's really cool. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, initially you may shrug your shoulders over, oh, I've seen everything in the Gulf Coast and that, but you really appreciate where you live. I mean, you look out the window and you're going across water twice on the trip, and it's really a neat experience. And then you get into New Orleans, you go through past those cemeteries that are, you know, the above ground graves. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you just get taste and that flavor you get that taste and that flavor where you live. And then I think there's something to be said about that. It's a neat little trip. I mean, it's for anybody, you know, yeah, have that opportunity one time, and I think you'll understand what I'm trying to say there verbally. It's hard to describe. it's a neat ride.
No, I'm excited about it. We are going to take that ride. Also, before we wrap up, too, if they didn't catch the debate yesterday that y'all put on with AL.com, can they go find it online? Do you have it archived somewhere?
Yeah. Well, my story's up on AL.com about the debate. And then, of course, we have AL.com has a YouTube page, and you can go there and find it fairly easily, or just type in the search bar AL.com debate, and that one will pop up. But it was an hour-long debate, sandwiched in between two other debates. We got one, the Fox 10 debate was Monday, and then there's another one tonight. I believe Darwin Singleton's hosting it for PMI. So, yeah, this is debate week, and we're only a week out from the runoff. So
that's right.
It's an important time to watch these, yeah.
Well, talk about going forward, and I'm glad you are reporting on it. Y'all go read all that at AL.com, or if you just want to talk to John about college football or KISS or things, you know, they banned, how do they find you online?
Yeah, very, very social site, John Sharp 99.
Good stuff, John. Be good. We'll talk soon.
All right, John. Thanks.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 127 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Wednesday style. Glad to have you along. And yeah, come on out and see us at the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo. Midday Mobile live from the expo on Friday, so noon to 2. And I'll be out there before and after. But in addition, on Saturday, I'll be out there, and Mike Ward and I will be on site doing FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. It won't be from 7 to 8 as normal. I mean, there will be one there, a replay, but we'll be doing Saturday's show from 11 to noon. Right before the Auburn game. So come on out and be part of that. It's at the grounds, and it's 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Right there, let me try to get a couple texts in here before we go to the news. We'll come back. We've got a lot to talk about with Dr. Andrew Gentry. He's been on the show with us before, paleontologist, talking about fossils, a big one found out there just recently. So we'll talk about that. Chris, I don't know. Chris said, I'm going to say no. Chris texted in and said, can you smoke on the train? I'm going to say no. I'm just going to... We'll say that'd be a no. I may be proven wrong. Amtrak may have, but I'm going to say no. Oh, and also, I see, Chris, where you're chiming in about the ABC store thing. We'll probably have to carry that on until tomorrow's show. But the ABC's wanting to raise money, right? Raise revenue for this big facility they're putting in near Montgomery. Like I said, the discussion for me is not really one of what they're putting in taxation, which is a fair discussion, but it's one more of do they still need to be in the retail portion of it, right? So, but yeah, you, obviously people I saw from this morning on the text line talking about how much cheaper a bottle of whatever is out of state. Sure it is, but the revenue man will get you. You got bootleggers out there. And Billy D said, hey, a baseball stadium where you're facing Mobile Bay and you might have something. You know, it's not going to be that for hockey. But yeah, looks like hockey coming back 2027, 2028. More on that tomorrow on the show. We're digging in with some people who know a little something about hockey in Mobile. That'll be part of Thursday's live. All right, coming right back. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
So 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Start off here with my man, Admiral David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars, and get a midweek update on inventory. Hey, David.
Hey, bud. Inventory's good, but we're starting to realize it doesn't matter what we've got on the ground because we can go find whatever they want. You know, you and I talk about that all the time, and I know people probably get tired of hearing it, but we had another customer yesterday came in and looking for a 2025 Kia K5, and we found them one, bought it. It'll be here tomorrow, and they'll pick it up. So it's just so easy. I mean, it's just easy to come out, and if we don't have on the ground what you're looking for, you got to understand, don't pass us by because you don't see it. Come inside, let us find it for you. I mean, this is a, you know, pretty, almost a brand new car. It's got 14,000 miles on it, so we can do it all, whatever you need.
Also, financing options have been looking better and better.
Yeah, and these folks, they wanted to finance it with their bank, and we ended up beating their rate by 0.5%, which can be a lot of money on $25,000, mm-hmm. You know? And I think our term was even better, so it got the payment down even further than what they wanted. Simple interest contract, you know, they can pay it off whenever they get ready, and it all works out. I mean, every time, we just have to have the opportunity.
All right, well, tell folks how to find you.
You can give us a call at 251-375-0068. You come see us in person. We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. Or go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com. We had a gentleman the other day looking to sell an old vehicle that belonged to his father. Sent us a lead in on our website, and hopefully we got together and gave him a decent price, and we'll find out whether or not we're purchasing the vehicle from him this afternoon.
Good stuff. David, we'll check back soon.
Night, buddy. Have a good day, Sean.
Okay, there goes David at LCM Motor Cars. And good to get this man back on the show. And yes, it's cliche. I get it. It's been too long. It really has been too long. Dr. Andrew Gentry, paleontologist, and bon vivant, man around town, joins us to talk fossils. Hey, Drew.
Hey, how are you, Sean? Thanks for having me on.
Man, it's always a pleasure. You know, we started talking about fossils and how old some of the fossils. I remember one time you and I were talking. I was turkey hunting up near Selma, and I was digging, you know, these shells out of chalk banks, and we're talking about how old those were. And you know, I was kind of impressed. And then you said, "But Sean, there's a lot older fossils in Alabama," And you got another one of those to talk about today. How old are we talking about this leatherback sea turtle fossil?
So this leatherback was actually dated by the Geological Survey of Alabama. It is 32 million years old.
30?
And I know that a lot of people probably, you know, I hear a lot of people question, you know, how in the world could they figure that out?
That's yeah, how can y'all figure it out?
All the time.
How can you figure it out, Drew? What do y'all do?
So it's a pretty lengthy process. You know, a lot of folks think we're just, you know, throwing out guesses at these things, but in reality, we do have scientists around the world that work to determine the ages of different rock formations, and they do so with a process called radiometric dating. And that's a really complicated science word that just basically means we look at the decay rate of the naturally occurring radioactive isotopes that are found in the rock. And we know the rate at which these isotopes decay from their unstable states to their more stable states. It's the same way that uranium decays because it's a radioactive isotope. There are these naturally occurring isotopes, so they look at the rate of decay of these isotopes, and then they basically just do simple math. It's not really complicated science. They look at the ratio of the more unstable version of these elements versus the stable version. We know the half-life, the amount of time that it takes for these things to decay. And we basically do simple arithmetic to determine how long it's been since that particular rock was formed. And so they come up with these numbers, and they're able to assign ages to all these different rock formations. And then we have somebody from the Geological Survey who comes out and confirms which rock formation this came from. And then they check back in the scientific record and go, okay, well, the radiometric date says that that rock formation is 32 million years old.
You know, what's crazy about a number like that, and it's almost too hard to picture. I'll be in here. I'll have Dr. Philip Carr on, and we'll be talking about, you know, Native Americans, and we go through the 15,000 years. Now we move back to 20 or 25,000 years, and my mind sits in races of, you know, what it looked like and the land mass at that point. But I got nothing for you, Drew, on 32 million years. What is going on planet Earth at that point?
So it's totally normal for us not to really have a concept for what a million years really is, because as humans, we're used to conceptualizing things in terms of our own lifespan. Humans generally don't live beyond about 100 years, so we're really good at imagining how long 50 years is or imagining how long 100 years is. But when you start trying to just imagine how long 1,000 or 10,000 years is, you're already sort of stretching the limits to what humans are capable of really conceptualizing. So when you start talking about a million anything, it's tough for people to understand that. A million, telling people to picture in their heads to picture $1 million. What does that look like? Or 1 million pennies even. That's a huge number that we're just not accustomed to. So when you start trying to tell people to imagine what things were doing 32 million years ago and how long that really was, it's challenging, and so it's understandable that there's this sort of difficulty in imagining how long ago that really was. And so in Alabama, 32 million years ago, most of the southern half of our state was at the bottom of the ocean. We find fossil evidence of productive coral reefs. We find things like sea urchins and coral fossils and shark teeth and all of those things all over the southern half of Alabama. And over the last 80 million years, sea levels have actually been fluctuating and generally moving south. And so if you go in Alabama, basically as you go north, you're going backwards in time. The rocks are getting older and older the further north that you go in our state. And as you get closer to the coast, obviously they're getting younger. And so about 2 hours north of Mobile, the rocks there are between 30 and 33 million years old during a period of time known as the Oligocene. And it's a really cool period of time, and cool is a pun intended, because we were actually going into an ice age.
That's why the water was down, right? That's why the sea level had moved back out.
Well, the sea level at that point was actually further south than it had been, because back during the last part of the time of the dinosaurs, it was actually way further north. Mm-hmm. So places like Greene County and Hale County and Lowndes County, they were actually at the bottom of the ocean during the last part of the time of the dinosaurs. And so that's why people in those counties, you know, they frequently find seashell fossils and shark teeth. But you go further south, you're getting younger. And so here we are 50 million years later during the Oligocene, and we're getting into an ice age. And so we're coming out of this really tropical period of time, going into an ice age, and it's this period of time that we actually know very little about. And so it's really great to find fossils like this because they tell us so much about what was going on in the environment during that time.
Yeah, I think about trying to finding a fossil like this might be so big it hides in plain sight. And I want to talk about the discovery of this because I think, and I'm just guessing maybe the river they were on, but I spent a lot of time canoeing in some of those streams up there. And I'm always looking shark's teeth, smaller things, right? Something
right.
that it says here, the fossil is 4 feet long and 3 feet across. I wouldn't even know what I'm looking at. That you know, my eyes wouldn't even be tuned into something that huge.
Right, right. That totally makes sense. That's, you know, a lot of people say the same thing. They look at fossils, even the ones that have been recovered and are in museums, and they go, I would never have thought that that was anything special. And it because it takes a trained eye. You have to be looking for these things for years and years. And it just so happens that the Coleman family, the family that actually discovered this fossil, they have been searching for fossils along the riverbanks during family fishing trips for years. And Adam Coleman, his father actually got him into fossil collecting when he was a kid. So this, you're talking 30 or 40 years that he's been looking for fossils along the riverbank here. And so he knows what to look for. He knows what's a fossil, what's a rock. And his father had an extensive collection of fossils that he had collected along the riverbank. And so Adam was very, very knowledgeable about what to look for. He had taught his wife, Adrian, what to look for. His two children knew what to look for. And his daughter, Taylor, is actually the one that found it. And so they had stopped during a fishing trip that they were on, and they had basically taken a break for lunch. They got out of the boat, and they were walking around on the riverbank, and his daughter found this very odd sort of dome-shaped thing on the side of a huge limestone boulder that was lying there on the riverbank. And she called everybody over, and they immediately knew that it was something strange, but they had never seen anything out on the river like that before. They had been finding the same stuff that you were talking about, like shark teeth and seashells. They had never found anything like that. And so they didn't quite know what to do with it. And they knew that it was something special, but they couldn't figure out exactly what or even who to tell about this discovery. So they reached out to apparently somebody at the University of South Alabama. They never heard anything back. And so they just sort of kept it a secret. They didn't really say anything else. And it became like their lunch spot. They would go fishing and then they would just go visit this strange thing that they had found and they would eat lunch next to it. And that was kind of it. And so almost a year goes by and Adrian Coleman just happened to see a story about a research article on a fossil turtle from Alabama, and it happened to be by a paleontologist in South Alabama, and it was me. And so she said, okay, well, let's reach out to him and see if he can come take a look at this thing. And so I, in the fall of 2022, I get this random email saying, hey, we found this really bizarre-looking thing out on a riverbank. It was a couple of, you know, sort of blurry cell phone photos that came with it, and she said, we want to know if you'd be willing to come out and take a look at this. And, you know, I get a lot of messages like that. I get a lot of people that, you know, they want to know what they found out in their field or out on the, you know, wherever they are. And so oftentimes it's just really weird shaped rocks.
Yeah.
But not in this case. And so that, but I reached back out to her and I said, you know, sure, I'll go take a look at it. And so I met Adam, her husband. I met him out in, like I said, I don't know the exact geographic position of the middle of nowhere, but this had to have been somewhere close. And then we met at this boat ramp out there, and Adam took me by boat upriver a few miles to where they had found this thing. And when I walked up to the boulder, it was probably about 30 feet back from the water line, and I walked up to it, and I just remember just being absolutely stunned silent. I have been collecting fossils and studying fossils in the state of Alabama my entire life, and I've never seen anything like this.
So, I mean, it is that I wanted your interpretation because I'm not only collecting fossils, you got a thing for turtles, turtle fossils, and this was like nothing you had ever seen.
It's exactly right. Yeah, my research specialization is actually in fossil turtles. Believe it or not, they fossilize really well because of their shell. So as a paleontologist, it's a great group of animals to study because, unlike a lot of things, turtles have a really a robust shell that fossilizes extremely well. So we have a fantastic fossil record of turtles. And so I have been studying fossil turtles professionally now for over a decade. And when I walked up, I immediately recognized what this thing was, that it was not just any turtle shell, that this was a leatherback sea turtle shell. And the reason that I was able to know, to identify it so quickly is because leatherbacks have such a unique shell. It's totally different from every other type of turtle. Most turtle shells are made up of these big flat bones that lock together to create the shell. Leatherback turtle shells are made up of hundreds of these little irregularly shaped bones called ossicles that are all linked together to create sort of this tile mosaic look. And it's incredibly unique. It's only leatherback sea turtles that have this really wild shell. But the thing is, those little ossicles are only held together by a thin layer of collagen. And a lot of people know what collagen is, and it's not very durable tissue. And so when leatherback sea turtles die, that collagen usually decays very quickly, and those ossicles fall apart. So usually what happens when we find fossil evidence of a leatherback sea turtle, it's in the form of one or two of these little isolated ossicles. You never get an intact shell.
Yeah, how did this one get preserved so well?
It was just in the perfect condition. It was buried in the perfect condition. So very, very rarely you will have a situation where an animal is buried very quickly after it dies. And it could have been due to a large, there may have been a storm at the time. It may have been, I mean, we get tropical systems here. It may have been a storm that buried this animal very quickly. It could have just been a high rate of what's known as sedimentation. So marine snow, you get detritus raining down on top of whatever died, and it prevents scavengers from being able to get to it, because that's oftentimes what happens when something dies in a marine environment, is that sharks and predatory fish and all kinds of other things are going to pull it apart, and you're never going to get this intact thing. So this was just a perfect, perfect scenario where this thing was preserved, and the sediment that it was preserved in would harden into what became limestone. And so it gets even more incredible from there. It's not only that it was buried in these perfect conditions, but then it hardened into this giant limestone boulder, and then millions of years later, that boulder fell away from this cliff at the riverbank and cracked open at just the right spot, so that the shell was actually preserved on the top of the boulder and visible so that the Colemans could find it.
What a bunch of circumstances to lead to that. And, you know, I always think about that when, not anything that big, I never pictured it, but I'd be riding down a bank of a creek that I know there's fossils in. And I go, I wonder what's back there 10 feet in that dirt or something. You know, you just don't know.
You never know.
Wow. And so leatherback sea turtles, we got them today, but this one is a different species, I think I was reading.
It is. This is a brand new species. It's also a brand new genus, which is actually a whole level above being just a species. So you can have multiple species within the same genus. And this is actually a brand new genus of leatherback sea turtles. And so we spent, after we recovered the thing, we actually got it back to the lab, and we spent about 6 months comparing it to all of the other leatherback fossils that have ever been found anywhere else in the world. And after about 6 months of doing that, we were able to determine that this thing was completely unlike any of them. And so it is a brand new genus and species, and the species name we named Colemanorum, after the Coleman family. So they are now, they now have this species named after them.
Now, and we've got just about 2 minutes here before we have to wrap, but we've talked about it before that Alabama is a heck of a spot for fossils, and this seems to continue to be proven true with these discoveries. I mean, as, I don't know, people always think fossils, I'm going to be in some arid desert zone, you know, digging up in a western climate, but Alabama showed itself to be quite the fossil home.
Oh, it absolutely is. Alabama, a lot of people don't realize, Alabama is actually the number one state in the country for fossil diversity. We have a higher number of fossils from a higher number of different plant and animal species anywhere else in the United States, and we probably have one of the highest levels of fossil diversity of anywhere in the world. We are the El Dorado of fossils. We have more than just about anywhere else. We've been number one in fossil diversity for years and years now, and we keep having these incredible discoveries, and it's something that a lot of people, even that live here in Alabama, are not aware of, and that number one title is something that we should all be really proud of, because being number one in fossil diversity is a title that we won't lose just because Nick Saban retired.
Well said. And I'm excited with all these new discoveries, and truly got to get you back on the show soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Sean.
Always a pleasure. Dr. Andrew Gentry, paleontologist. Y'all go check out the stories, or we can link them through. I think they're on our Facebook page as well. 32-million-year-old fossil. I thought stuff I found was cool. I got nothing on this.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 156 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, kind of wrapping it up here on a Wednesday. And some cool text here. My buddy Ben said, when I had we had some hunting property in Wilcox County, very hilly, we found shark's teeth in those hills. So I found them up there in the Black Belt, but there's some areas down here. And it kind of being funny, it's almost like I'm, you know, protecting a fishing spot or something, but I am. Some of the creeks here in southern Alabama, which I know a lot, and look at the text line, a lot of y'all know about it. These different creeks are pretty good places to go and just, I mean, I have no, like, fancy equipment. It's just sit down in the sand, you know, with a maybe a cold beverage and start looking through stuff and finding stuff that's really old. But now, nothing like that, 32 million years old. It's cool stuff to think about. We had all those turtles back then, and Alabama's still, I think, very high up on turtle diversity in the nation, maybe in the world. I think it is the world, so still doing it. And by the way, this texture right here amused me so much. I almost interrupted Dr. Andrew Gentry in the middle of it, but this texture said, if you look at Keith Richards, that'll help you understand what 32 million years ago looked like. But, you know, yeah, and he's fossilized. He doesn't get, every time you like see something with Keith, like, he looks like he did 15 years ago. He just looks like the same guy. Maybe we need to put him, maybe, you know what? Can we do some radiocarbon dating on Keith Richards and just really see if he's that age? Can we get a sample? But we'll hopefully, you know, keep him around a lot longer before he's truly, like, fossilized in the ground out there, because the stone's still doing it. Amazing stuff. All right, Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Do it again tomorrow. And reminder too, Friday, on the road with the show, we'll be at the G&D Outdoor Expo at the ground. So that's Friday. And also back on Saturday for the outdoor show from 11 to noon. So make sure to plan to come see us. Come see us all 3 days. We'll be out there with our booth and love to visit with you. All right, Paul Feinbaum, take it away.